SF Youth Community Radio Station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Cancria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
How are you feeling?
Well, for the audience's understanding, I have lost 50% of my field of vision on account of my eye being sewn shut, but that's okay. Just had a surgery and I'm recovering and I'm feeling better than I thought I would.
Which is excellent. I also fell ill over the weekend, and I attempted to do an interview later in the show on the verge of a... Well, I wasn't feeling my best. Later on, we interview Warren from Stats Canada as we talk about one of the latest releases from their infographics. They rely on specifically police crime data. This yes. isn't a survey. This isn't my feeling on this hate is. This is someone has been arrested, charged, and I believe the stats are based on convictions as well. But they, I know it's arrest rates.
I think it's arrest rates.
Yeah.
Noting that arrests don't always lead to convictions.
Exactly. Actually, one of the stats that they point out is it's below average for a conviction rate, hate crimes. Hmm. So not great. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the rise of rates. And we have a great conversation with the Anti-Hate Network about their Pride Survivor Guide, which they were partly inspired to create following the vicious attack in Hamilton.
Pride event, what was it, 4 years ago now?
Give or take, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Both of those are coming up later in the show. But before then, we want to wish everyone at the Canadian Curling Championship, specifically the Canadian 2S LGBTQ Plus Curling Championship, the best of luck. It was at time of recording. It's still underway. We don't know which of the Pride teams across Canada eked out the win on the curling floor, or ice, or rink, I don't know what it is. I don't curl.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, I guess you'd call it the ice. It's this weird material, like, it's not smooth ice. It's, like, bubble paper ice.
Mm.
And then you've got, like, one rough shoe and one smooth shoe, and then you, like, skate on one shoe and you push on your other one. It's really weird.
Oh.
Curling is here. I did not know that there was a 2S LGBTQ curling league, but it doesn't shock me because I've known.
It is the only one in the world. And it is in Canada.
Well, I mean, curling is one of our national sports, but I've known many, 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 mostly gay men, but, you know, it varies. A lot of queer people who do curl. It is a weirdly queer friendly sport. I don't know what happened in the history of it that made it like that. Maybe it's got that small town vibe where, you know, the kind of small town where it's like, yeah, he's different, but he's ours.
Yeah. He's on the curling team.
He's on the curling team. Yeah. So exactly. I think probably something like that led to, I don't know, but yeah, this doesn't surprise me at all. And if you're wondering about the context, but like, why is there a 2S LGBTQ curling league? Yeah. It's just curling is a weirdly gay sport.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it makes you gay when you do it, but, no. And like I said, it is, yeah, this one is the only one in Canada. Very excited. They're in St. John, I believe. In other news, we mentioned last week that France was looking at apologising for the country's treatment of LGBT folks between 1942 and 1982, following anti-gay laws that were brought up under the puppet Nazi regime mm-hmm. of Vichy France. Despite the end of the Vichy rule, the French government maintained those laws up until 1982. The Minister Eric Dupond-Moretti recently issued an apology on behalf of the French Republic mm-hmm. Just this week. So, yeah, we wanted to make sure that the Justice Minister's comments were captured because we mentioned it earlier.
It was a blend of upholding it and neglecting it to remove it. Not that neglecting it to remove it makes it better, but it's, I don't know.
There was also a referendum in Ireland, the family and care referendum, one of which had the potential of expanding the definition of family within the Irish Constitution to focus not just on marriage, but on other durable relationships. Mm. And the other one would have proclaimed that the state will, quote, endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. They were going to remove that language, the neglect of duties at the home piece in particular, to one that recognises the provision of care. Well, it was a resounding no on both referenda. It also suffered from a lot of people, including disability rights activists, carers, and various groups, raising concerns about the wording. So the communities that this legislation was supposed to, this constitutional change was supposed to protect, actually advocated against it. Mm-hmm. It's been widely seen as a pretty profound rebuke of the Irish government and the Irish government's handling of the referendum. But it was, let me get the stats here, 67 against on the definition of family and 73 against on removing, and I quote, the endeavour to ensure mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. Okay. Now, do I believe that the million plus Irish people believe that these women had a duty in the home? No. But I do believe that it was likely not phrased in a way that would be beneficial. Mm-hmm. So that Irish law was quickly defeated. And finally, there was a settlement in Florida. The state of Florida settled with teachers, allowing them to now say gay in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
They've now opted, realizing that any potential challenges could go all the way to the Supreme Court, and it would put freedom of expression up against this law. Now they can say gay pretty much in any context, with the exception of it being taught. So okay. It's instruction is going to be regulated by this law, and not expression, references, pictures of your same-sex significant others, or casual conversation with students.
Right.
It is specifically instruction.
Right. So if a student brings it up, it's all good.
Yeah, and that was the crux of a lot of the concerns. So they did that. And then, all right, mm-hmm. We are going to play now Bite It, the clean version by Julia Dales. And following that, we have our interview with the Anti-Hate Network, and then we will be hearing Person, the radio edit by Balzer. We'll be back just after this.
How come I got everyone telling me to come back home? How come no one believes me yet? I got goals. Oh, and they all got their opinions. What a waste of time that was, playing with her instrument. But I think you'll like it. Excitement, you think you'll have just a taste? Nah, but you'll bite it. You'll bite it. How come you're looking at me like that? I've gone weird, haven't I? You'll bite it. You'll bite it. You'll bite it.
And welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. Now, we are recording this interview ahead of the rest of the show, and Sebastian is recuperating from his eye surgery. But I am very excited to have Hazel Woodrue here from the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. You run pretty much the education that the Canadian Anti-Hate Network does. And as we explored earlier in the show, the rates of hate crimes have gone up 80-odd% since 2018. So it's been the before times, since 80%, absolute madness. And sexual orientation has seen double-digit increases in particular. Now, before we started recording, we were talking about how we're going to approach this conversation. And I mentioned that although these hate crimes, the statistics, it's all very in aggregate. You can get lost in the numbers. You lose the humanity of it in a way. You had what was going to be a lovely time, but the ultimate misfortune of being in Hamilton during that attack. So
yeah.
I realize I've waffled here, but A, if you want to introduce yourself to our listeners, and B, how did that attack, put you in the direction of doing this work that you're doing, if at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, I would say it definitely drove me towards this work. Usually it's actually the incident when people ask me how I got involved in doing this work. That's what I talk about, is being at that event. And then in the aftermath, as myself and my community members and my friends were processing and unpacking that, I realized at some point that the people who had come to attack our community were all on social media and were all posting about what they were doing on social media and talking about it. And I realized that they were putting a lot of information about themselves on there, that if I paid attention to that, I could learn things about them that would help me and my friends and family and community members protect ourselves and defend ourselves. And that's really how I got involved in anti-fascism. It should have been earlier. I wish it was earlier, but that is the 2019, the origin story of me getting involved in that.
I mean, it's worth saying it is extreme events that cause these extreme reactions in all of us. And I cannot imagine, and I just, for the listeners, I want to paint a picture. I'll be vague so as to not literally re-traumatize you. But there was a group of evangelists, protesters, moving from pride parade to pride parade across rural Ontario in particular, causing all kinds of disruptions. There was yelling, screaming, unbelievably hateful comments. An occasion of joy, celebration, love ruined. They showed up to do violence of some kind or another.
Oh, absolutely.
And when someone takes a bike helmet and attacks someone with it, that is not accidental. That is not a coincidence. You know, it's not an act of God. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that is unbelievably maliciously and hate motivated, where they are driven by, I mean, I suppose that's part of, that might be a great question for you that we've been kind of posing to people. It's possible in these incidents, I would imagine that it helps these attackers to dehumanize them.
Absolutely.
How do we address this mounting hate without also dehumanizing the perpetrators of it in the sense I mean here of making them seem like a monster or otherworldly, or because they're still human and accountable?
I think that's such an important question that I'm in frequent conversation with people that I do this work about. It's so important because the moment that we dehumanize our, like, quote unquote enemy, any kind of enemy, is the moment that you start to lose, because they become unpredictable and they become something out of a storybook or a fantasy, as opposed to people who can be predicted and who can be disrupted and prevented from doing harm. And so when we talk about people in really dehumanizing ways, not only is, I think, like, I am opposed to that on principle, I'm also opposed to it strategically, because I think that it really backfires, because it makes the people who come to these events, the far right, fascists, violent hate mongers, it makes them out, first of all, to be much more like insurmountable than they actually are. Essentially, the purpose of the Pride Defense Guide is to help to remind people that there are like very concrete strategies that they can take to navigate these situations, and that, like, we're not living in some kind of fantasy where, you know, the next thing happens and now he pulls out a sword out of his backpack or something. Like, that's not going to happen. These people are predictable and they're watchable, and we can, that's one of the reasons why the kind of research that we do at the Anti-Hate Network, which is open source intelligence gathering, is so vital. And it's the kind of work that anti-fascists have been doing thanklessly for decades, is paying attention to what these groups say and put online is often very useful in understanding and predicting threats.
I mean, this is what stuns me. These protests are going to continue, but also at the same time, you know, we want to share joy and celebrate and have love. But I think what this guide really walks folks through is, like, we can do that. We can have a lovely Saturday. But now, to be sensible and to be self-aware, you have a lot of really great tips in terms of, you know, keeping an eye on the social media for what they're saying to get a sense of, is there going to be disruption? How big is it? That kind of thing. Arrive together and leave together. Unbelievably sensible things. When you were putting this guide together, were you planning to state the obvious, or are these things, I mean that facetiously, or are these things that perhaps as a community we seem to have forgotten, and the safety element there is really worth revisiting?
I think that, so some of it, when I was writing it, felt very second nature to me. And I realized, though, that it felt second nature because of not just, you know, with respect to Pride Defense, but these are ultimately tips, strategies that can be applied to any kind of anti-hate or anti-fascist mobilization. They're not all things that I knew when I started going to that kind of thing. Like, I would, when I first started doing this kind of thing, I would just, like, walk from my home to the mobilization alone and then take the exact same route back. And that's just an easy thing that, like, you don't have to do that. And it's easy to make plans ahead of time to not have to do that. And so some of it, something that, it's actually something I struggle with sometimes in this job, is trying to balance remembering the things that have become really second nature for me, not just from an activist perspective, but also because it is my 40 hours a week full-time job, that not all the things that I say or think or know are second nature to everyone, or were even second nature to me 10 years ago. I think that when it comes to bringing us back to thinking about safety around Pride, there's a few things I think it's important to remember. And one is that there may have been, like, a period of time when Pride felt safer for some people, for white people, for a lot of the time, for, like, white men. Pride isn't a perfect utopian sanctuary where all the different kinds of oppression and systems that we interact with that you know, abuse people on a daily basis just cease to exist. And so Pride has always not, it has never been inherently safe for everyone. That has for a long time come from more systemic angles. And so now we are seeing a direct fascist threat attack on Pride. And so those of us who maybe felt safe going to Pride for some time are realizing the precarity of that safety, ultimately. One of the things that I talk about in the guide is what are some of the reasons why the far right protests Pride and other progressive social justice events. And one of the reasons they do it is to try and deter people from attending. It's the same reason why they protest outside of drag story time and stuff like that. And one of the suggestions that we give is ahead of time for your, you know, whatever your organization, affinity group, whoever you are, to be creating social media content that reminds people that Pride started as a protest, it started as a riot against oppression, and that people have gone before us in attending Pride and organizing Pride as an act of resistance. And so we can do that again. And I share that because in anticipation of the trauma that happens when people feel like a place that is safe to them is under siege, and because meaning making around that is a really helpful way to process trauma. And if we think about ourselves, not to compare one to one, obviously, but think about ourselves as part of a lineage of resistance and of protecting ourselves and our communities and defending ourselves and our communities, that I think is a way to process what is going on.
I agree. What the platform of radio doesn't quite capture is my expressive eyebrows and nodding as you were speaking. Yeah, radio is yet to capture the eyebrow raise. It's a shocking medium. But you know, does it sound hyperbolic and maybe you know, the sky is falling? Maybe, but I'm thinking of Tennessee. Just this past week, they rolled out some proposed legislation that is now allowing, I think it was Tennessee, where they can opt out of doing gay marriages. Mm-hmm. We've all thought that was locked down. That was, you know, set in stone. We've collectively moved on. We can marry someone. Amazing.
Yeah.
Check.
Yeah.
Let's move the conversation forward. Boom.
Yeah.
Now they're looking at rolling it back. And I understand entirely. You know, that is, I think, an example I can draw easily from this week. Mm-hmm. There are dozens of them. Small changes in public perception or the law available. We're not as safe as we are. And some folks have never been as safe as others. But I'm wondering, I really hope folks go through and read this guide. I think it is very useful information to have in advance. You know, I don't know if everybody wants to read a 17-page guide, but we all know someone who would love to read a 17-page guide before going to Pride. You know, it's definitely worth it. So find that person in your group.
Also, on the landing page for it on our website, it's not the PDF, but the landing page, there is a like one page handout.
Amazing.
That doesn't cover everything. I think ideally the way that I had designed it was based kind of to be literally a handout. So like assuming that you and your affinity group are going to show up to Pride, and maybe we're anticipating you're going to have to engage in some kind of defense. Probably there are going to be other people there who may want to help, but they might not know, like, what's the strategy? Like, what are we doing here? And mm-hmm. So the idea of this handout was basically to be a, like, this is who they are, and this is who we are. And these are the kinds of ways that we, the people who like are handing you this, have decided is best to protect ourselves and our communities and stuff like, so that's stuff like, we're not going to get into fighting matches with them because they're not here to listen to us. They're here to capture footage of us, to make mean, nasty memes out of us and dox us. That's what they're going to do with the footage of you screaming at them. So we're not going to do that. We're also not going to be live streaming each other. Like, they're live streaming for sure. We're not going to be live streaming each other because we don't have everybody's consent to be putting their picture on the internet as confirming attendance at a Pride festival, which is unfortunately still not a thing that is safe for everybody to do. Not everybody is out as participating in this kind of thing. And that's not even to talk about the risk of doxing. It's also because when I was at Hamilton Pride in 2019, it was just, there were so many different groups that showed up, like independent of one another. The obviously, like, the real rock stars of the day are the really phenomenal people in pink masks who held up that big black banner.
Yes.
And who are
really, I believe it was the anarchist group, I think.
Yeah, who are ultimately credited with the fact that there were most of the people who remained on in and around the area where the actual, like, festival was happening were never aware that an attack was taking place, which is really the point of Pride Defense. It's not for the glory, and it's not for, like, I mean, it's clearly not for the glory, because the vast majority of people who participated in that big black banner are not publicly identified and do not want to be publicly identified. So Pride Defense is not, it's not for the glory. It is for exactly that reason of being so effective that the targets of that abuse or that attempt at abuse are never aware that they were threatened, at least not on the day of, and are able to just to enjoy that. But there were so many different groups in addition to the anarchists who showed up. One of the things that I noticed, there were a lot of really, really young people there. Yeah. I, as the oldest of many children in my family, was very worried about them. And so I was, so this kind of handout thing is not meant to, like, peace police anybody. It's not meant to tell anybody, like, this is the only right way to protest or something, but it's meant to be a quick way to give, to get people up to speed about the work that, like, you and your affinity group have been doing for weeks or months. So that's the idea of the handout.
I think for the general public, anyone who's coming in as an ally and just there, you know, this is, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty true. It's probably fine. But, you know, these protesters aren't looking for Joe Blow public who's shown up one time. They are there to make a point, and they want to make sure they're making it to the right audience. And unfortunately, that puts some of our community more at risk. Absolutely. And so for those folks, I think the guide is brilliant. But where is the queer community have been in times as violent as this in the past in terms of the crime rate that we were talking about earlier?
Absolutely.
And have been resilient. I think because of the AIDS epidemic and other things, we've lost a lot of that generational knowledge.
Yes.
And the fact that that generational knowledge didn't really move from older folks to younger folks. And there are so many young gay people now who may not be aware of how, you know, it looked like in the 80s, if you're going home alone and or what have you. But that knowledge exists. We have emerging prides across Eastern Europe. That knowledge exists today in the other movements. How invaluable was it being able to tap into how other anti-hate work has been done and how we can draw those best practices back to our community where this has been such a surprising?
Yeah, so tremendously. I tell people all the time, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. In a lot of situations, we don't need to reinvent the wheel, especially when it comes to on the ground, in real life protesting. Social media, the internet, maybe we're the first people who have to figure some stuff out there. Okay. But we don't need to reinvent the wheel. I think back to, but the folks who protected funerals from the Westboro Baptist Church And they had these enormous angel wings that